We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. For summing up week 13, today is Monday, December 7th. Jeff and Chris here. Got a lot to talk about here off of a Giants win, a road win, an upset road win. You might, you know, your Giants might have won Survivor Pools yesterday, Chris, except, and well, and maybe because the Raiders won, people who had the Raiders and took going against people that took Seattle might have won yesterday. So let's start off with your Giants, and then we'll talk a little Raiders-Jets because those were two wild games.
Yeah, so I watched the Seattle Giants game. It was mostly a terrible game. The second half was a little better, but it was tough to watch. I even had to I missed parts of it because there were like reviews and stuff that were going on with just – it was just so boring. There were a lot of commercials. There's a lot of just stoppages. It was just a tough game. But it picked up a little in the second half when Gallman started running wild. And, you know, it seemed like one of those classic Giants loss games where they're ahead most of the game. They're playing, you know, punching above their weight a little bit. And then they fall apart, and then Russell Wilson wins the game. But it didn't happen. They actually won. And the reason they won is because as much as Russell Wilson over Colt McCoy is about as extreme of a matchup a quarterback as you can have, the Giants dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage.
And they did.
And I have to say, you know, like I talk about this a lot, but like Dave Gettleman has done a good job and he's been correct about a lot of things. Like he traded like a third round pick for Leonard Williams. And they're like, why is he doing that? Leonard Williams' contract expires. Well, then he franchised him and he's playing like a Pro Bowler. He's got 8 sacks. He's been getting a lot of pressures all year. Signs James Bradbury, who has been a shutdown corner. I mean, Metcalf had 8 catches for 80 yards and was rarely open. You know, there were some good catches Metcalf made, but Bradbury was right on him. The moronic announcers tried to make a big deal of the Metcalf straight arm to Bradbury, after which he gained 0 yards and went right to the ground. It was like, no big deal. Bradbury played great against him. And then, you know, the offensive line, which was really bad for the first half of the year, is now good. And I don't know how much Andrew Thomas is part of that. I did see Scott Barrett make a valid criticism of Gettleman. He had Justin Herbert, I forgot about this, ranked as clearly the number one QB in this class, ahead of Burrow and ahead of Tua, and thought if Herbert had come out last year, he should have been the number one pick. And also had Danny Dimes not only ahead of Haskins, but ahead of Kyler Murray. We'll see long term if that ends up being correct. But Scott Barrett was saying, well, if he was that high in Herbert, he should have taken him at number four. And that's a fair point of criticism. But besides that, get a tackle to help your quarterback that I guess he does like still, even though he's hurt. And you get a very good defensive line and a improving offensive line. I mean, if Barkley, who was the guy he drafted, were running behind it instead of Gallman, he would have broken a couple of the house. I mean, there were some long runs by Gallman that nobody would have caught Barkley on. So I like the idea of building a team based on offensive, defensive line, and competence at, you know, at quarterback, and then signing an elite cover corner to shore up the defense. So it's, you know, they're still just 5-7, but they went to Seattle, got a win. Seattle sucks though. I mean, it's Wilson, Metcalf, and a bunch of scrubs. I mean, Carson and Lockett are good players, but that defense is bad. The offensive line is terrible.
Yeah.
There's not a lot to work with there.
It's not the most aesthetically pleasing, but it works. And especially in that division, it might work even a little bit more. I mean, just think about it. They should have beaten the Eagles the first time. They should have beaten the Cowboys in Dallas.
Right.
You know,
But the football team could have easily won either or both of those games. Like,
That's also true.
You know, so there's been a lot. They've been in a lot of close games. I mean, they had the Rams play dead even in L.A. until that Cooper Kupp touchdown very late. They got destroyed by the Niners. But they've played a lot of tough, close games. And Joe Judge, I don't like his punting decisions. He's nutless monkey a lot. But that team shows up and plays defense. The offensive line's improved, which is huge. The running game's improved. Obviously, Colt McCoy cannot be the solution. He did absolutely nothing. He's a total zero. But they got a win, and I don't know if Dimes can come back next week, but
right.
If Dimes can come back, and they have a couple tough games left still, but I think this is they're the best team in that division.
They only, if I recall correctly, they only have one more divisional game left against Dallas, right?
Right, which is probably the weakest team. Well, the Eagles might be the weakest team now. The Eagles really – I think Jalen Hurts, though. I mean, it was – when they put in Hurts, it was Tom Savage, Deshaun Watson. It was like Wentz is Savage, barbaric play, can't even complete a pass. And immediately Hurts is running, making throws on the move. If Fulgham doesn't drop that ball at the 13-yard line, that game may go, you know, down in the wire at 23-all. And then there was he turned it over.
I think it would have been 24-23. Wasn't the final 23-17?
16, I think. No, it was 30-16. It was 30-16.
Oh, was that 16? I'm sorry.
Yeah, they were up 7 at the time. But they would have, you know, tied it probably. You know, they still would have had to score. And then Rodgers would have had enough time, probably would have beat them still, but no sure thing.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought the number was 6 at one point at the when they got it down to. But you're right, it's 16. All right. But at any rate, did they miss an extra? They must have missed an extra point then.
I think Elliott might have missed one. I can't remember.
That's natural. Yeah, he did miss an extra point. So
he's terrible. He's one of the worst kickers in football.
Did make
the Bengals.
Well, there was a whole lot of that yesterday. There was a lot of competition for worst coach. There's a lot of competition for worst kicker. I mean, you look at Minnesota. Dan Bailey. Oh my gosh. You saw how little the Vikings trusted Bailey. Instead of okay, we're going to settle for the field goal in overtime as soon as we get in field goal position. No, we're just going to run it all the way down to the goal line. They should have just ran. They should have done one more play on third down. They right. trusted Bailey that little, and I think that was the right call. I really do. You know, so many times that you're like, you see these teams. Oh, we'll play for the 40-yard field goal. Well, not every kicker is Justin Tucker or Jason Sanders. There's a lot of kickers still. Michael Badgley is bad.
Zane Gonzalez is out there.
Zane Gonzalez, oh my gosh. Every week, Chris, every week. It's like hey, let's play for the 45-yard field goal because that's worked so well before. We'll just play for that.
The Cardinals could be 9-3 if Zane Gonzalez was Jason Sanders. I mean, he's worth three wins. Now, obviously, your kicker's not worth three wins because you're not always in those situations. But if you sub in Daniel Jones healthy for Kyler Murray, you know, maybe they lose a win, maybe. But if you sub in, Jason Sanders or Tucker for Zane Gonzalez, they gain three wins.
I don't know. You sub in Andy Reid for Cliff Kingsbury, you get a win too, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
although Andy Reid did some. I mean, Andy Reid didn't challenge a touchdown.
That was one where nobody knew. Not even Hill knew. I mean, they went. You were watching the condensed version, so you didn't see this. But they showed a sideline conversation, and Reid's like, "Why didn't you tell me you caught it?" He goes, "I didn't know." You know, he thought he hit the ground. Everybody thought he hit the ground.
Well, I can see Hill, like, you know, being like discombobulated, like in the air, knowing that he didn't catch it cleanly and just assuming it bounced back into his hands. That makes sense to me.
Well, it hit both helmets. It looked like it hit the ground. I can see why. Right. And, you know, you have a finite amount of time. You know,
somebody up there was asleep at the switch. Because if it's at all, wait, I mean, you should just always be watching in case.
Yeah. And keep in mind that was on the play, the ball, like it came on the side that was not facing the Chiefs sideline. It was facing the Broncos sideline. So they needed a replay monitor, obviously.
That was hilarious, though. That was truly hilarious. I mean, I have Hill in a league, but that team was dead, so I didn't really care. But what a horrible beat if you're a Hill owner. And then he got another one called back on a hold.
Yep.
And they just missed another one where he's wide open. I mean, Hill could have had like 3 or 4 long touchdowns that game.
Right. Yeah, that game could have been a lot different. It could have played out a whole lot differently. Let's talk about that real quick. So, there's a couple infuriating things. CEH being active and then not playing. You know, so aggravating there. We should it's on us to kind of read the signs. I have, like, even that morning they were saying, like, well, they'll probably limit him. Well, and that should have been your sign not to start him right then and there. But because he didn't practice Thursday or Friday. So that's kind of on us. It's kind of on the Chiefs for leaving him active. I even picked up Darrell Williams in the league where I have CAH so I could have a last second pivot. Saw he was active. Was like, okay, he's active. I'll just leave him in. Oops. I got 0 points instead of 3. You never know. 3 points might mean something, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. I mean, all year. I mean, it's funny. Like, he and Miles Sanders. If you had been in an auction, PPR, and been like, yeah, I'm set. You know, I got two monster pass-catching running backs.
Yep.
I mean, those guys have just killed you. And, yeah, Sanders was hurt a couple games, and obviously CH was sick this game. But, like, mostly it's just that they don't throw the ball to those guys. And there was just no reason to think that was even a concern heading into the year. So it's been a tough year for a lot of those running backs.
Yeah, Mixon's been a bust, you know. Jacobs misses a game at the most critical time of the year and, you know, hasn't been great lately anyhow.
Hold on, Jeff. You're going to have to talk for a minute. My buzzer's going. I think it's Heather and Sasha. So just keep talking. Leave this in. People need to know. There's a personal life going on here. Hold on.
Okay, very good. Josh Jacobs, first round pick for a lot of people. And at the end of that first round, you could have taken Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. You could have very easily. A lot of people probably took, Pat Mahomes around that turn. I've seen some people do that. You could have had Aaron Jones at that turn. You could have had, instead, no. Some people took, in my primetime league, which for about, Chris, I'm talking about my primetime league, how for 5 weeks it was looking really damn good. Jacobs and Mixon were both producing. Now that's been a disaster for both of them lately. I could have had Aaron Jones. I could have, in the first round, not in the second round. I didn't have two bites of that apple. Could have had Devontae Adams in the first round, but not the second round.
That was the pick.
Or could have had Tyreek Hill at the first round, not the second.
Either one. Yeah. Devontae or Tyreek.
I could have only had one of those, but
those are the picks.
What a big difference.
I was in good position to win minimum 3,200 and maybe 7,000 in my prime time. Mm-hmm. And I drafted Prescott. I wrote about this. I drafted Prescott. My backup was Burrow. So I lost both for the year. And then it all started. The QBs are what killed me. I would easily be in it. 4 weeks ago, I started Baker Mayfield over Daniel Jones in the monsoon. And I meant to switch it, but there was like internet congestion. I couldn't get the move in 10 minutes before the switch. It just wouldn't let me do the move. So I just was frozen out. So I got screwed there. That was 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I put in a bid for Taysom Hill on the Saturday bids. And the guy was playing. Got him to block me, even though he didn't use him, has never used him since, and I still won the matchup. So all the guy did was hurt my point total, which was the key, which is what I needed. So all he did was hurt my point total, didn't help himself whatsoever. And then last week, I had Daniel Jones starting, because Daniel Jones was on bye the week I started Alex Smith. I had Daniel Jones starting, but he got hurt midway through the game, so that cost me. And then this week, I foolishly played Trubisky over Mayfield. So the last 4 weeks... I basically just destroyed my my primetime season, and I'm not going to make the playoffs. And just that's it. You know, I had the chance for 3,200, 7,000. It would have been, I had the best record if I had won. And that's it. The guy I played this week had, I thought I was doing well. I purposely didn't look at the guy I was playing. And I was like, oh, you had Darren Waller going. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's got the Patriots defense. Oh, really? Is it really necessary for F's sake for the Patriots defense to get a blocked field goal touchdown too?
That was so Chargers. That was so Chargers. Like, that was so funny, but
they got a blocked field goal touchdown, a kick return touchdown, and a shutout in the same game. And I'm going against him, Waller, Corey Davis. So, I mean, it just didn't, you know, it's like, okay, that guy's got 180 points and still has a player to go tonight. And
so, it was like you know, going against Bartle in the stake league last week there, where you had like 65 and he had 220 or something.
200.
Like that.
Yeah. He just had everybody. And, but I had a good week. Like I got 127 plus Debo and Tucker. I could get 160, 170 points this week, but too little too late, you know? And so, I was bummed. It was a terrible day. It was mostly a terrible week 13. Yeah,
there was a lot of terrible things. We'll talk about more terrible things in a second. But first, smart sports bettors always know where to find the best odds before placing a bet. And that's why smart bettors use PropSwap. You can always find the best odds on PropSwap because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. See a ticket you like, but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair, then buy it. PropSwap sellers are always willing to negotiate. We all know bookies never will. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $500 in bonus cash. Just use the promo code ROTO500. That's promo code ROTO500, and PropSwap will match your first deposit up to $500. Become a smarter sports bettor today. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. All right, Jeff and Chris here. Okay, some terrible things that happened. So you had your quarterback issue there, your quarterback decision that went wrong. I had one too. I'm in the Scott Fishbowl playoffs. It's a super flex league. My three quarterbacks are Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, and Justin Herbert.
And who did you say?
You can see where this is going.
Of course.
There are negative points for interceptions, negative points for incompletions. So I started Justin Herbert over Baker Mayfield. That was a difference of 60 points, Chris. 60. 60-point difference right there. Herbert was negative like 14 or something, negative 16. It was such an epic fail. I got that. I mean, I didn't even think about it. It was like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, right.
It was exactly, a brainer, like, as it turned out, and I have none.
Right, but at least that was an easy call. Like Trubisky and Mayfield, you had Mayfield one spot ahead of Trubisky in your rankings. I saw other people had Mayfield up once. It was like, I mean, Trubisky one spot. It was like 50-50.
Yeah.
The implied totals were the same in both games initially, you know, for the underdog Browns and the favored Bears. You know, even though the total of the game was lower in the Bears game, the implied totals were exactly the same. I was like, Trubisky runs a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's a slight advantage when the totals are the same. And I thought, you know, David Montgomery is the running back. The Browns have stud running backs. I think that probably given the same amount of projected points, the Browns are more likely to get touchdowns on the ground. Plus, the Bears have Allen Robinson. They just seem to have more explosive receivers. But what actually happened was the Bears scored three rushing touchdowns. I got lucky on a Cole Kmet catch and run short pass touchdown later in the game. And the Browns scored four passing touchdowns right away, including a bomb to Donovan Peoples-Jones. And I was like, this could not be going worse. And then they tried to get Mayfield a fifth touchdown. I also have Chubb on the team, and it was incomplete in the end zone. And then they handed to Chubb, who scored. But I mean, this is the first half. Mayfield's got 290 and four on my bench.
I know.
In a crucial game. And I'm like, dude, this is it was a dumb move by me. And I'll tell you why, because Mayfield, for all his faults, is a real passing quarterback, especially the NFFC with 6-point passing touchdowns. Like, he can sling the ball around and get 350 yards. Trubisky, he's kind of just a gadget, like running, scrambling, dump it off to Tariq Cohen when Tariq Cohen was healthy and he gets the yardage. He's not really going to mount consistent drives. And a lot of Mayfield's bad outputs were in horrible weather. Weather wasn't a factor in either game, so that wasn't really a thing. I don't know. In retrospect, I mean, it's easy to...
I'm going to defend you on this one.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, I mean, you got the game flow you wanted. It was 64 points total in this one. And it's just they happen to score from close. You know, it's sometimes where you happen to get tackled. Two, the Lions were missing Okuda and Trufant. I mean,
yep.
And three, you know, all the Bears receivers were there. You know, Robinson had showed up in practice Friday with an injury, but he played this game, looked good, in fact, made some pretty nice plays. They moved the ball. Trubisky threw for 267. The Bears just got stupid at the end of the game. I mean, the whole thing is they're protecting that 3-point lead, and they have him pass deep in his own territory. And they got the sack fumble. And
well, they had a 10-point lead. They had a 10-point lead with two and a half minutes left. Yep. And they gave up a bomb to Marvin Jones. I don't know how that gets through. They got one good receiver, and somehow he catches a 48-yard touchdown.
Right.
And then they get the ball. They throw. They get sacked. They fumble, and they lose the game. So that was ridiculous. But it gave me a few extra points with Trubisky.
They still had a chance at the end, too. I mean, they just decided to run on fourth and short, and I think third and short, too. I forget the third down play. Right. But point being,
The run was terrible because the upside of succeeding was so little. You just end up using your last timeout, and
right,
you know, now you got, you know, 18 seconds left at the 20-yard line with the first down. At least if you throw it in the end zone on that play action throw, you might get something out of it. You're still a huge underdog to win, even if you succeed in converting the fourth down. You might as well call a play that has some upside. But yeah, no, I get that all those factors were in my favor, and the runs too. Like, none of those rushing touchdowns were like from the 1 yard line. They were from, one was from the five, and they had to break two tackles. Patterson did that. One was from the four. Montgomery broke two tackles to get in. And one was from like the 13, where he broke like three tackles to get in. So like every time I was like, stop him. No. You know, and then like, so I was like, okay, this drive is used up. So it wasn't, and Trubisky had like 18 points or something. I mean, it wasn't like horrendous. Yeah. It was just how two things happened. Clowney was out for the Titans. And then I watched a lot of that game. I've never seen less of a pass rush.
No, they were terrible. And Clowney's been out for a while. He just decided to have surgery to get it taken care of. So he's done. The thing is, they can't generate a pass rush.
I mean, but in the first half, the second half, they got a little bit when they were sort of making a fake comeback.
Yeah.
But Mayfield was standing back there with this 3-man rush, and it was like, I mean, he could just wait forever.
Yep.
And I was like, this is not going to go well. I mean, it's kind of dumb. It wasn't like I was going against Mayfield. So, you know, of course, I didn't want to be as egregiously wrong as I was. But now I'm hoping that Debo and Tucker do nothing so that I lose by more than the difference of that and the 19 points I gave up with the internet congestion, so that, you know, that like, okay, I just lost. It's one thing to just lose, right? You lose. You thought you had a good team. It was okay. You had some bad luck, some injuries. Other team beat you. Okay, sucks. Fantasy football. But to like make a lineup decision that cost you $7,000, or to have a internet glitch type of thing going on that cost you $7,000, that's hard to let go of.
Yeah.
So I'm rooting against my own guys, which doesn't even matter at this point. For peace of mind. I'm just like, I just want it to be like, yeah, I had a decent team. I came close. I had some injuries. Everyone has injuries. That's how it goes.
Yeah. Well, don't they have the second chance bracket in the online championship?
Yeah, but come on. That's like, there's like 2,000.
Don't you want to have more points going into that?
It's just so, that's so negligible, you know, that whole bracket and the payouts less. Look, I had a good team. I felt good about it. A couple things went wrong. You know, I lost Chubb for those key weeks. Kamara lost a lot of his value with Taysom Hill. Dak and Burrow got hurt. You know, there's some Jonathan Taylor last week had a smash matchup, but got COVID. When I had to start somebody bad. You know, just lots of little things like that. And I can't bitch about it too much. It was a good season. Everybody has their problems. The Tyreek Hill guy, as I mentioned, got totally screwed this week. There's been plenty of guys getting hurt in the first quarter, or, you know, Dak also having to get hurt pretty early in that game. You know, there's just been a lot of stuff for a lot of different. Oh, Burrow got hurt during that game in the first half too. Yep. I lost Dak in the first half, Danny Dimes in the first half, and Burrow in the first half on the same team. Besides all those problems,
that's a lot of first halves. I want to talk Raiders Jets. We teased this earlier here. What a surreal finish to this game. They could have ended the play before, you know, because, you know, on the play before they overshot, I think it was Aguilar was wide open and Carr overshot him. But two plays in a row, you're holding on for dear life. They have to score a touchdown against you. You're ahead by 4 points. and they do cover zero. They have no safeties. They blitz twice on third and fourth down. Such a Greg Williams sort of thing to do. You couldn't, you know, it was like, you know, I always say players don't punt. I mean, players don't tank. Usually coaches don't tank. But, man, you couldn't try to be looking like you're tanking more than you did on those last two plays.
Well, okay, so a couple things. And there's this is actually kind of serious, though. But so the Raiders had to execute, right? Like, yeah. Even if you blitz, like, it's still – it's a 45-yard pass in real time or whatever. It's you have to make the pass and catch.
Right, of course.
Okay, so you're not giving it away necessarily, but you're making it so that good professionals or adequate professionals can take it from you. One-on-one, guy runs a 4-2-8 on the outside, just throw it up and let him get it. That's what happened. But if they did that on – it's one thing to tank by, like, you know, let's say you start your rookie QB instead of your veteran. You start a lot of your experimental players to see who's good. I think that's legit tanking. It's not tanking. It's just prioritizing the future over the present and let the chips fall.
Right.
But if you're actually like trying to lose a game that you could win, not only does it like screw up the balance, say the Raiders are competing for a wild card, which they are with the Patriots and other teams, but that's close to point shaving. I mean, there's not a huge difference. Now, the Jets still cover the spread, but I mean, that's just incidental.
There's money line bets, teasers, you name it.
Exactly. And so point shaving is, you know, that's borderline criminal. So, you know, tanking in the game itself is a close cousin to point shaving. I mean, it's not far. Again, tanking, and I wouldn't even call it tanking, but prioritizing the future and your personnel decisions is different, right? Yeah. The Dolphins cleaning house, getting some picks. We call both of them tanking, but it's not the same thing. Not trying in a particular game, not putting a full effort strategically, either on the field from the players on purpose or strategically from the coaches is a close cousin to point shaving. I don't think it's like, they're never going to admit it, but it is a little shady.
It looked all the part. And, you know, they always say every play in the NFL, you're being judged. Whether you're a coach or a player, every play you're being judged. Now, Greg Williams has been in the league forever, so he probably doesn't care. You know, but it's not like nor Gaze are going to benefit from tanking for Trevor. They're gone. There's no way they're going to be around for Trevor. I can't imagine it.
Maybe talk to management and they're like, look, that GM who we got fired last year after they signed Le'Veon Bell and a bunch of other moves really put us in a hole. Darnold got hurt. And I just, you know, we don't even think Darnold's our guy. Mm-hmm. And because he was brought in with the old GM. And, you know, let's just don't worry about this year. It's a screwed up year anyway with COVID. Let's get Trevor Lawrence next year. And build it, you know, let's see if we may end up with Trevor Lawrence. We're still going to develop our guys. Are you positive they're going to be gone?
I mean, there's always a scintilla of a chance, but it's hard to imagine. I mean, the Jets do everything wrong. I mean, they lead the world in, like, you know, personal foul penalties on defense every week. They do stupid shit like that. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that they're going to be around. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, it's funny.
I mean, I don't know. I think the only real reason to get rid of – if the owner doesn't care, and he clearly is a bad owner, the only thing that's going to be driving them to get rid of them is public pressure, right? Is
right.
Like, no, you can't – we won't watch anymore if Gaze is our head coach. And the question is whether that'll work. I mean, look at the Knicks. I mean, the Dolans are despised. They couldn't be more despised than – if they tried, but yet, you know, they're still running the franchise. So
there's not some pretty really, incredible owners in New York, Wilpons, the Dolans, Richard Johnson.
Steinbrenner cheated. You know, he was like, what did he do? He got suspended for like a year. What was his,
It was the association with gamblers. It was the whole Dave Winfield thing where Howard Spira, like, get on Winfield about something or other.
That's what it was. It was something to do with that. But anyway, he got suspended, and that's when they actually built the team.
Yep.
that won the dynasty because they stopped trading for all these like overpriced vets. They stopped being the Knicks. They were the Knicks. The Yankees of the 80s were the Knicks of the aughts. It was the same thing. It was like this big market team that had had some success. They were obviously more successful than the Knicks because they won two World Series. But then they just started chasing after every washed up free agent. And George just kept throwing money at these guys. And it was one failure after the next until they suspended him. And then they started like, they traded for Paul O'Neill, which is a great trade, but they just started getting all their homegrown guys.
Yeah.
And they happened to come into like, you know, 3-4 Hall of Famers or Hall of Fame level guys at the same time.
Tends to help. Tends to help if you let them play and you draft well and develop well. And they got unlucky too during the Brian Taylor thing, for instance.
Right.
I mean, that was like 1.1. The only time that they've had like that high of a pick, and of course he gets hurt in a bar fight.
Right. It's how he got hurt that was unlucky, but pitchers at 1.1. Pitchers get hurt, you know.
Sure.
Probably would have got hurt some other way. But yeah, that's a unlikely way for it to happen. But you know, they had Jeter and Posada and those guys, so.
Yeah. But just think if you had a chance to win Survivor this week, you know, all these people were on the Raiders. All the Raiders can do is score a touchdown. There's 5 seconds left in the game.
No, it's all that stuff. The betting, the Survivor, the fantasy implication. I mean, I was going against Waller.
Yeah.
I mean, that half-assed. I mean, come on. You're not going to, like, double this guy. And
I was all over Waller this week. I had him in every DFS league and all that. But so it's foreseeable is my point. If Mick Squirkson is on it, then you know it's pretty obvious. But right.
Well, it's pretty obvious after the first half, maybe. You know, like it's just like, all right, this guy's killing us. Let's make an adjustment. You know. Yeah.
And the Raiders kept finding ways to keep the Jets in, and the Jets, you know, they actually played hard. I mean, I feel bad for the players actually too, because that's their career too. All right. Quick note: sports bettors know that magic happens. We saw it just talking about the Jets Raiders. When you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That's why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free 6-month RotoWire subscription when they place their first bet. Register on the BetMGM app or website, and once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insights. Find out why BetMGM is the king of the sports books by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the Red Line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. All right.
So we got some breaking news, Jeff, totally pertinent to what we're talking about. Jets just canned Greg Williams, but they did not can, I assume, Adam Gase.
Interesting.
So that's what I'm saying, is if they were going to can Gase, why wouldn't they do it now, right after they fired Greg Williams? I mean, if they're going to fire Greg Williams, they're firing people. If that's what's going on after that debacle, why wouldn't Gase be gone? I think he's going to be there.
He might be, which would be hilarious. Or tragic, depending on your point of view.
I hope he's there. I hope he's there.
Yeah.
I'm a Giants fan.
Yeah.
I hope Trevor Lawrence turns him down, too. I hope he pulls an Eli John Elway and just says, I don't want to play for this franchise. And then then he'd get drafted by the Jaguars right now. Although, you know, the Bengals aren't – well, they got that tie, unfortunately, that keeps them – the Jaguars have almost won a couple of games too.
Dude, they've been the master of the late drive cover. It's been awesome.
Oh yeah,
they did it again yesterday against the Vikings, getting that last drive. Although it put the cover in. I mean, they were still going to cover, but getting that late touchdown is like, oh, all my worries are just taken care of. Because I was super uncomfortable. It's like, I just don't want to have to take the Vikings as a big favorite again. I'm taking the Jags, even though I'll hold my nose on that. And that was a weird game because, you know, the first half, the Vikings didn't do hardly anything. And, you know, and then they start the third quarter at the pick six, and you're like, oh, this is feeling pretty good. And then they boom, 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 we're taking it to them. The Jags were turning the ball over. The Vikings are, scoring at will. And then they fumbled near the goal line. They had this other turnover. They kept finding ways to keep the Jags in it.
Yeah, I didn't watch that much of that game, but I did see the Dalvin Cook fumble. That was bizarre. It was like an weird exchange. And the Jaguars have been like spread covering machines of late. It's been I think what they should do is, of all the teams that don't make the playoffs, the team that covers the spread the most should get the first pick.
Yeah, and
the team that covers the spread the least. Yeah, it means you're outperforming your expectations. And so, yeah, I guess if you set the expectations low, you'll be more likely to cover. But then again, the team that currently is like 0-16 gets the first pick. So why should you be rewarded for sucking? And then I understand why you want competitive balance, but the best of both worlds is, why aren't you, you get rewarded for trying, and covering is trying, right? Covering is trying. So yeah. I think that's, although you would have some weird outcomes where teams are like, oh, we're down 6 and the spread is 4. Let's kick the field goal.
Right, you know? Right, right. Like, yeah, yeah,
we're
that's
1-10.
But that's why go back to your original idea of margin of victory. It should be like the total determinant. You know, you should be incentivized to try to score at all times, you know. You know, the team that has the highest total margin of victory is the number one seed. The team with the lowest margin of victory or you know, greatest margin of defeat should not be rewarded with the first overall pick, but instead, like, you know, go that route.
Right. Well, I mean, it would change a lot of things because nobody would be playing just to win, right? I mean, you'd have things where you were like, I mean, you would be playing to win, but you'd be like, also, there'd be like this other factor, like, oh, we got to score more points. We can't just kick this game-winning field goal yet. Let's try to get a touchdown and win. You know, let's win it in overtime with a touchdown. You know, like the Vikings were, not just because your kicker sucks, but because there's a difference. You know, how much you win by. But I do think in fantasy we do this right. We say, okay, the records are what win divisions, but we also want more fairness, so we're going to have total points be one of the playoff spots. And in the NFL, at least like one of the playoff spots should be total points, you know, total point differential, because clearly that's a better team to get in the playoffs. The other negative, though, would be that offensive teams would have an advantage over defensive teams, because winning 16-3 could be totally dominant.
Right.
But your margin's not that big. And then, you know, if you're 37
but
to.
That's a tie. But it's the tiebreaker, though, I guess I should say. You know, it's like what record matters first.
Right.
And then
not a tiebreaker. Yeah. It would be like one of the seed. Like you'd have four division winners and the two wild cards would be just total differential, not record anymore.
Right.
So you're trying to win your division. But once you have a team like the Steelers that's way out there, now you only, but it'd be kind of weird though. You'd only care about point differential. But then again, winning in point differential, you can't improve your point differential when you lose a game, Jeff. Did you know that?
It's true. It is true.
That's why the Steelers have the best point differential, I'm pretty sure, because they don't have a negative one on their whole slate.
Well, I can look at that. That can be found.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So, by the way, chances to win is going to be odd for you today. 3 games you have to factor in.
I'm dreading. Let's just do like 10 minutes at the end, like the other thing. I don't. It's just like make my head hurt to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah. By the way, you're right. It is Steelers plus 129 going into today. Chiefs are 116 at our second. Saints are 106. So
right. Whoever has the fewest losses. I mean, it's very hard to beat the undefeated team because every one of their games has contributed to their positive net point differential.
Right.
Whereas you have one that's actually subtracting if you had a loss.
Yeah, that's true. It is indeed empirically true. All right. Anything else you want to talk about here? We got lots of stuff to talk about, actually. But so do you think Jalen Hurts starts next week?
I think he has to. I mean, he was just so much better. And even if we didn't even see Jalen Hurts, even if we didn't know who Jalen Hurts was and he didn't play well, that experiment is over. The problem is they just paid him a bunch of money and it's guaranteed money, a lot of it. So that's the problem that they have is if they turn to Hurts and Hurts is good down the stretch, I mean, they can't put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, but
they kind of would love
to. That cost is sunk, though. I mean, it's already spent. You're stuck with it regardless. You might as well find out what you have in Hurts, right?
Yeah, but like if somehow Wentz were miraculously to play great down the stretch and they win the division and he wins a playoff game, you still couldn't trade him with that contract. But I don't know. I think you're probably right. I don't really think they get out of that. And it's one of the worst I've ever seen this year. I mean, it's like unwatchable. It's, you know, Mitch Trubisky looks better than Wentz to me.
Yeah. I had Brett Coleman on the podcast last week. He does this thing on YouTube. It's called The Film Room, and he broke down Wentz. And it's not just the line. The line is horrific. There's none of it. But it's his footwork is terrible. His decisions are terrible. The play calling is terrible, too. Doug Peterson is an active part of the problem. I mean, this is a guy in his fifth year, and he still he's got these problems. You know, this isn't some, like, rookie or right. Sort of project at this point. This is who he is.
Well, it's just weird that he was good for a while, and he's only 28. And what could explain a total collapse? I don't understand.
Yeah.
The disconnect between who he was and who he is. And I just don't get it. I don't know what's wrong. It's obviously a combination of things, but I could see it for like four or five games. And then they kind of right the ship. Like you look at Baker Mayfield yesterday. Well, he had forever to throw. So almost any NFL quarterback could do well in that situation. But you know, you'll see him look really bad and then he'll have a good game or two. But Wentz is just like, he's had some like heroic games where he sacrificed his body and
right.
made some good throws this year, but it's been like sustained poor play, and not just poor, but like dreadful, like the worst imaginable throws at people's feet, terrible right. interceptions, bad decisions. You're just like, who is this guy? How is it even possible that this is the same guy that was the front runner for MVP the year he got hurt and they won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember a game where he actually was a positive difference maker. You know,
the Ravens game, he like made a comeback at the end.
Yeah, but do you want to know? He did make a comeback, but he averaged 5.3 yards per attempt in that
game. Right, right. That was his good game.
Yeah, that's his good game. Because,
yeah, he's been bad.
Yeah, it's really been awful. I mean, the Giants game, he threw for 359, but he had that soul-killing pick. You know, that one where he did the hero ball thing, rolled out to his left and threw it up for grabs in the end zone. Anyway, there were other missed passes in that game, too. It was only one interception, but there's a lot of bad, bad decisions all along. Yeah, I'm having a hard time seeing it, too.
Let me give you a quiz. Cam Newton missed a game this year, so he's played 11 games. How many rushing touchdowns does he have?
I read your column.
Oh, so. Yeah, he's got 11 rushing touchdowns in 11 games. I mean, Kyler Murray, I think, has 10. And in like 12 games, I mean, Cam Newton's going to have like, he's going to be among the league leaders in rushing touchdowns. And we talked about this. Now, unfortunately, he's only got 5 TD passes. I thought he'd have like 18 TD passes on the year. Not like he's going to end up with like 9 or 10.
Right.
So he's not been that valuable, but man, 11 rushing TDs.
Yeah. There's games where they don't even try to throw and right. they didn't have to yesterday. Really? That was the thing. It was kind of crazy, but, yeah, it is wild. How about Jonathan Taylor coming to life? 13 carries for 91 yards, had the touchdown on 4th and 4. That was, you know, that was a total blown coverage by the Texans. I mean, he just slipped out and nobody was on him. But it was kind of the point, though, is, you know, nobody expects him to do that, but he's capable of doing that.
Yeah, he looked good. Mario wrote something the other day on Twitter where he was saying that he just expected Taylor to get it eventually.
Yeah.
And that it took him a minute in Wisconsin initially, and that the schemes were a little different and he just needed to figure out what he's supposed to do in these situations, but mm-hmm. that he would almost certainly get there. And I was dubious. And it looks like so far Mario was kind of right. Like this last game, the game before he was at COVID, both of those games, he started to get it and you saw him make some nice cuts. And he's starting to understand what he's supposed to do. And he may be a league winner in these playoffs if you made it with him. You know, he may be a guy that, like, steps up big in the next couple of games.
That's right. That's right. Meanwhile, Houston almost pulled this game off, but for a bad snap.
That's just so – I had Houston +3. That's such garbage, man. I mean, they're at the 2-yard line on 2nd and 2, down 6. Come on. It's just, and then you just fumble a snap and it's over. That's just so.
It was a shotgun snap and it was a bad snap. And it was like low down here to his left foot. And he was trying to go, he was going to roll right too. I think that was part of the problem. But, you know, when you think about how the decimation of his receiving core, they lost Cooks in that game too, remember? He got checked for a concussion. They were down to Kiki QT and Chad Hansen. That was it. I mean, that's who they were throwing
to. They should have won the game.
Yeah. I mean, the Colts contributed to that too by running Nyheim Hines right up the middle on 4th and 1.
I saw that just got totally like, smothered.
You have all these other options. I mean, I run them outside if you're going to run them. Don't run it into the pile. Well, they'll never see that coming.
Well, also,
until they did.
but also when you have Rivers as your QB, running outside is not as effective because there's no doubt who's got the ball. You know, there's no maybe the QB will keep. There's no chance.
Yeah, even there's no RPO. Have, that's for sure.
Even if you have
Baker, it might be Mayfield. Play action. They could do play action still, and he does do that pretty well, actually. But still,
even if you have Baker Mayfield who's slow, you could still get a yard or two on a RPO, you know, a dive. But with Rivers, it's just that's just not in the. You can't have that in the playbook. He's too slow.
Yeah.
So that hurt him a little bit, and it's funny because people never talk about the indirect effects of things. It's like. I saw a Titans game against the Colts a couple weeks ago where they faked the handoff to Derrick Henry at goal line and threw to one of the tight ends. And it was like the easiest touchdown. Maybe Tannehill ran it. I can't remember. But it was the easiest touchdown ever.
He ran it. I remember that. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, yeah, that's because you have Derrick Henry. And the defense just they have to sell it to stop him.
Right.
Because if you don't, they'll just give it to him every time. They'll score every time. And so there's this other second-order effect by having Henry that is enhanced. And then people don't realize the negative effects of having Rivers. Like, there is no threat of certain plays at all. It can't even be in the playbook. And so that makes defense easier. And so we just look at these things in isolation, but there are, like, other effects of it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's so crazy is the Patriots went 45-0, and it started to make me think that maybe coaching is a factor in the NFL.
Just a little bit.
But it just gave it's a little bit of evidence toward that thesis. But also, like, the whole idea, like, running game doesn't matter. It's only the passing game that matters. You can't win with the running game. Now, they're only 6-6, and they're not a great team. But, like, I just think that people are looking at all of that by, like, averages, like net yards per play, net yards per attempt, all these sort of, like, overall averages, and not realizing you need four chances to get 10 yards. And then defense, you can give up a lot of yardage in between the 20s, but if you know how to stiffen, you can't run inside. If you can't run well, it's harder to score in the red zone because it's a lot easier to cover the receivers than it is when you have the whole field behind you. And these sort of these factors aren't really taken into account. And I want to see, you know, what these running teams like the Titans. I mean, the Titans can also throw it. The Patriots, the Giants are one now by necessity. Although even with Danny Dimes, they're still a running team. I want to see, you know, in the winter, some of these games, I want to see some of the running teams do well. Now the best team in the league is still the Chiefs, and they're one of the most pass-heavy teams, but that's a little bit of an unfair comparison because they just happen to have arguably the greatest quarterback of all time and great receivers with him.
Yeah. By the way, there's about 10 worst coaches in the NFL again. I'm starting to notice that. Someone like
10 bottom fives.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. If not more. But, you know, because at one point – Doug Peterson is the worst. No, Anthony Lynn is the worst. No, Adam Gase is the worst. No, Zach Taylor is the worst. And then we've already lost to O'Brien, Patricia, Dan Quinn. I mean, there's a lot of worst coaches out there.
Well, how about Pete Carroll punting on?
Oh my gosh!
46, the Giants 37.
He did so many stupid things yesterday. How about blowing a timeout when the Giants are set up to kick a field goal?
Right.
But let's wait till there's 12 seconds left on the play clock, then call the timeout. Oh, that'll ice Graham Gano, you know, who's been around for 10 years and needs to be iced. What? Right.
In the middle, in like a third quarter, it was like a fourth. It was like
9 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
They were going to go 17-5. They're 14-5, 9 minutes in the third quarter. Oh, let's ice him. He's going to get really nervous with this kick. It was such a small kick in the game.
Yeah.
You know, of course he wasn't going to get nervous about that kick. It was just like a routine kick.
It was so bizarre. So bizarre, some of the stuff they did. And punting early on, too, from the 37. Well, taking a delay so that you wouldn't, you know, don't have to punt from the 37. That would be embarrassing. Well, we can now punt from the 42.
It's fourth and six, too. It wasn't fourth and 12.
Right.
He punted on fourth and six from the 37.
Yeah. I was watching, I watched maybe 15 minutes of college football on Saturday, but while I was eating lunch, I threw it on. And twice I saw these horrible situations. Wisconsin down 8 from midfield. They had like a 4th and 4. They punted. And of course, the announcer's like, yeah, pin them back inside the 5. It was inside the 15, but whatever. You know, dutifully like endorsing that move right away. No, you're at midfield. You mean, and of course, Indiana got a couple first downs, and Wisconsin had to start all over again. Even worse, Tennessee is down 17 in the fourth quarter to Florida, who's the favorite, too. A good offense, all that. They're down 17 and like 13 minutes left. It was midfield, it was 4th and 12 or something like that. It's a tough one, but you're down 17. And then an analyst goes, no choice but to punt. No, there's a choice. Don't you realize punting is the risky player? Florida, of course, drove down and scored. Now all of a sudden it's 31-7, game over. You know.
Well, Vic Fangio kept doing it. He was like on his own 41 or 40, and it'd be fourth and three, and he'd punt it back to Mahomes. And then literally two plays later, Kelce would make a catch, totally wide open. DeMarcus Robinson would make a catch. And they're then at the Denver 40, and luckily the Denver stiffened in the red zone a couple of times and held them to field goals. But it's like
Collinsworth implied that was the strategy, is bend, don't break, and then stop him in the red zone. You know, I could get behind a couple of those punts, but the last one was the worst. You're now trailing.
And they can run out the whole clock.
They almost did run out the whole clock.
I think Andy Reid should have gone for it.
I agree.
On fourth down, because you never want to be up six and give him the ball, even though it was a minute, no timeouts, and Locke wasn't even close. It's just like, you know, first of all,
it's a risk reward. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
They have to score the touchdown. The thing is, when you're up three and you go for it, let's say you get stuffed at four, if they get it, it's game over. So that's a win. But if you don't get it, I would trust Mahomes to get fourth and three all day over my defense. But secondly, if you don't get it and the Broncos get the ball, now they do have McManus, who has a good leg, but
it's just a tie. Playing,
right. They're going to play for the field goal too. Like, they won't even play for the touchdown unless they get super lucky.
Right. These
coaches are dumb like that. They should play for the option of the touchdown or the field goal, but they end up being conservative because they know they can get the field goal. So sometimes when you go up six and force that, you almost force them to beat you because they play for the touchdown. Now, again, it worked because there was a minute, no timeouts, and Locke wasn't even close. But I thought A, win the game, and B, if you don't, worst case, it's a tie pretty much.
Right.
Here, you're definitely not going to win the game, you know, on the field goal, and you still could miss the field goal. And then you're obviously getting the loss if they score the touchdown. So I thought that was kind of dumb, but I still think Fangio should have gone for it. I mean, you're not trying to get a close loss. You're trying to win the game. You're the underdog. You need volatility. They're 13.5-point dogs.
Right.
And so you want to – and secondly, like, I just think, like, they needed to shorten the game more. They did a decent job of shortening the game. I mean, Mahomes didn't go crazy in this game. But every time you convert, keeps the defense on the field. You get a new set of downs. You're punting. You're just, like, puts your defense back on the field. And, again, like, the bend but don't break thing is possible to do in the red zone because – you don't have to worry about Tyreek Hill getting 40 yards behind your guys. But,
right.
You know, when they're on the 8 or 10 or 12-yard line, okay, like, you don't have to worry about that. Cover a lot less field. And I think they still could have done the bend but don't break and done a decent job. I mean, it was first and 10 at the 10 a bunch, and they didn't score. That wouldn't change. But I thought, like, it was so easy for the Chiefs to move from 140 to the other, 130 to the other 30 that –
yeah.
There's just no point in punting there when you could keep the ball and wear them down.
Keep in mind, they had a touchdown that they missed. They had another touchdown call back. They had another instance where they're down inside the one and then ran some weird reverse play that lost 5 yards. And they ended up kicking inside the 10. I mean, this game, by all rights, shouldn't have been that close.
Right. But it easily could have got out of hand. That's right. They got kind of lucky that it even went that way. But a fourth and three between the 40s, you're going against Mahomes. And that defense isn't very good. You got to go for it. I mean, I just think it's like, you know, if you're going against the Seattle punt, as bad as Pete Carroll's punt was, and it was bad because it was fourth and six, 37-yard line. At least you could say, well, it's Colt McCoy back there. So if we pin them, then, you know, they're going to probably have to punt it back to us pretty soon and, you know, maybe make a turnover, have some disaster back there. You could at least argue that. But like against the Chiefs, it's the opposite argument.
Yep. Agreed. Wholeheartedly. Finally, less said the better about the Bengals, but that game was super weird. They had the one touchdown to Tyler Boyd on a two-yard out pattern where Brian Jones took a terrible angle. It was Brian Jones, I think, that took a terrible angle to try to make the tackle. One guy was able to block two tacklers, and Boyd took it to the house. That was the Bengals offense the entire game, except for the weird play at the end of the second quarter where both Boyd and Xavien Howard got ejected. Somehow the Bengals got the penalty on that one. It turned a 35-yard field goal attempt to a 50-yard field goal attempt. Of course they missed it. That cost me the cover. I'm really kind of
annoyed. Yeah, me too.
Because that was 11.5, and they won by 12, of course, naturally.
Right.
And so that also meant later in the game when they had it late in the scoring position, they're still down. It was, you know, 19-10 doesn't help them. They couldn't kick a field goal there. They had to score a touchdown, which, of course, they threw an interception instead. You know, that cover was there for the taking. But the fact is, the Dolphins also had a defensive touchdown reversed on review. It was close. They were shutting down the Bengals all day. I mean, but the problem was they were shutting themselves down, too. the Dolphins offense with Tua in there was not very good at all.
Yeah, it's Dolphins are such a weird team. You know, they're one of those teams that like just gets by with junk. They're like one of those like Bears teams from like 10 years ago that you're like, this team is not that good, but they just always seem to make a play, get a block punt or something, and end up beating these teams. That was annoying. Much respect to Mike Thomas, though, the real Michael Thomas, who took out Jakeem Grant, started a whole brawl.
And, that took like 30 minutes to resolve that. It was insane.
Scott Hansen was very excited about the brawl. He was,
of course he was. He's very excited. Offense.
Very excited.
But that was an off game. The Bengals were undisciplined. They were stupid. I mean, Zach Taylor does deserve to be fired. He should be on that list, too. He's another bottom five coach. But we'll see. All right, we'll close with that. Looking forward to these three games, two today, and then, of course, a Tuesday night game again. And we'll get back to normal, theoretically, next week, although I'm sure there'll be another outbreak.
Yeah, I'm sure something will happen. Yeah. But all right, man.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for listening. Please support our sponsors, PropSwap and BetMGM. And got Joe and Jake talking free agents tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.